Friday night, the Pirates hit the halfway point of their season. They're one game behind last year's pace, but it was right at this time last year that they fell apart and lost 12 of 15, and the season was done. We open the show today with what's the bar now for success for this team this season? And City Limits and Paul both said you got to have a winning record, 82 wins. I say you got to go to the playoffs. You have to in this environment with this pitching, with everybody packed together, and I think you have to make a pretty big deal to do that. Here to talk about those issues and all things Pirates, our friend and yours, Gormy the Owl, Kevin Gorman from the Trib. Gormy, how are you? He's on. Look at him, Paul. There he is.
Look at him. He looks good.
I'm doing very well, Joe, and I appreciate the inquiry.
You're welcome. Hopefully you're watching out there on 93.7thefan.com, the Odyssey app. Gormy is on screen right now with us. So, Kevin, ranking or rating this season so far, are the Pirates ahead of, right where you thought they would be, or behind the pace that you predicted going into the season?
Well, I predicted 82 and 80, and they're just a game or two behind that pace. So I'd say they're beyond or behind expectations, but I also didn't expect to see Jared Jones and Paul Skenes in the starting rotation at this point of the season together and pitching as well as they have. So that would have changed my expectations had I been able to predict that.
So if you look at it, you feel like what you predicted is going to be not enough. You think they're going to be better than that?
I think they should be. I mean, if you looked at how they played at the end of last season, when, you know, they were playing mostly the young guys, that they went with the youth movement, I think that was kind of telling that this is a team that felt like, you know, the future was near. And then they kind of went out and signed some veterans to, like, okay, well, we need to give these kids a little bit of breathing space. And, you know, the veterans haven't performed as expected. Not one of them. I mean, Michael A. Taylor has given you the defense that you were hoping for, but he's not provided the bat. This is a guy who had 21 home runs last season. Rowdy Tellez has played better defense than expected, but it took him a long time to get his bat going, which he's maybe as hot as maybe the hottest hitter on the team right now. And that's saying a lot with Brian Reynolds having a 23-game hit streak. You know, Yasmani Grandal has been everything you expected from a veteran catcher with two All-Stars on his resume as far as calling games, but his play behind the plate has left a little bit to be desired, and his bat has been almost non-existent. So, you know, the veterans they went out and got, Martin Perez and Marco Gonzalez, have both been guys that were supposed to be workhorses that have both been on the injured list. So I think that's been the biggest thing, is that the veterans haven't carried this team early the way the Pirates expected. Even Aroldis Chapman, who's been dominant recently, had got off to a bit of a rough start there as well. So that's been a bit of the problem for this team, is that, you know, you kind of thought that the young guys showed some signs of life last year, and that the veterans that they brought in to give them a little bit of a grace period, that they haven't really done the job as expected.
Kevin Gorman, Pirates beat writer for the Trib. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Gormy, what's your sense of the Pirates' willingness to part with one or multiple top five prospects, top 10 prospects? Are they willing to move their very best prospects to make this year's team significantly better?
I don't get the impression that the Pirates want to move their top five prospects. And I'm not really sure. I'm kind of ambivalent on this one, because I think they have to make a move. I think if they want to be contenders, and they should try to be contenders, when you have the type of field that's out there right now where so many teams are in it, you should be doing something to try to give your team a chance to win. That said, I don't know that they want to part with any of their top five guys, especially some of their young pitchers. I think Bubba Chandler would be one guy. I think Tamar Johnson would be another. That would be kind of hands-off to some degree. I don't think there's anybody in this system that would be considered untouchable. The untouchable is starting for the Pirates and wearing number 30. And I would think that Jared Jones will be right behind him as far as an untouchable. But anybody else I would think is fair game. But I also think if you're going to have a plan and you're going to have a process of drafting and developing internally, if you're going to have a group that you're trying to bring up together so that you have a starting rotation that has Mitch Keller, Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, and hopefully someday, a Bubba Chandler or Anthony Solomito or Braxton Ashcraft or Thomas Harrington, that you're not going to go trade all those guys away for somebody that is most likely a rental. So I think there's some concern there that the Pirates shouldn't just completely abort plan. But I also think that this is a team that if you've put such an emphasis on drafting and development and bringing up young players, that's what they're there for, is to use the prospects to bring in veterans, that when you feel like you're close, which is what they've promised all along, is when this team has shown signs of being a contender, that you've got to use the prospects to make a move. That's what a lot of other teams do. Sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss, but you should be going down swinging one way or the other.
Well, I think the thing about it is, if you look at what they, and we were just talking about, if you look at the market right now, it's going to be really tight because there's not that many teams that are going to be sellers, which means you're probably going to have to overpay a little bit. Do you think they have the ability to stomach the fact that they might have to overpay a little bit if they want to get the kind of players that they need to get in here to take them to the next level? I mean, really, I think they're only one or two legitimate bats away from really being a real problem to deal with. So do you think they have the stomach to, if it means throwing in one extra prospect that maybe they didn't want to get to part with to make a deal, do you think they have the ability to do that?
Well, they certainly have the ability. I mean, they have one of the deeper farm systems in baseball. Maybe it's not as talented heavy as a team like the Baltimore Orioles, but in terms of depth, the Pirates have a lot of prospects that are top 30 caliber guys, that are especially young guys that are playing, low A, high A, double, not so many of these in double A, but they have young prospects that they could deal, and that the impact wouldn't be felt for years. Kind of like what the Arizona Diamondbacks did when they traded a young Leiver Peguero for starting Marte, that they were willing to take that risk of try to win now. And it didn't really work out for them, but it also hasn't worked out for the Pirates. When you mentioned about the Pirates, the plan, the hope is that the Pirates would get a couple of the bats that are internal, like a Henry Davis or a Jack Sawinski, that they would get a couple of those guys. And I would say maybe primarily a guy who was their MVP last year, who I think a lot of people thought would take a step forward and be an all-star last year, Key Brian Hayes. If they can get those guys' bats going, they don't need to go outside the organization to acquire a bat. If they can get everybody else humming the way that Reynolds and Telez are, which you're not going to get everybody to stay that hot, but if you can get some consistency in the lineup and then get the guys whose bats have been quiet, that's one thing. But that's hope, and hope is not a plan. We all know this with the Pirates, that their five-year plan has involved a lot of hope and very little results. Here's an idea that I've had this week, is what the Pirates should maybe try to be identifying is not necessarily a team that's out of contention that is willing to sell off players and right now sell them off at a high price, but maybe more so looking at a team like the Baltimore Orioles that have some top players in their system that are stuck in the minors, because that's a team that is going for broke in terms of trying to win. And they have some players that are in their last year of a contract or have years of arbitration left, but are eventually going to lose their jobs to some top prospects that are coming up through the system. So there's three guys on the Baltimore Orioles that are in the lineup right now that I think could be available at some point. And the Orioles made some deals like this last year when they traded away Trey Mancini, traded away their all-star closer. But Anthony Santander is a right fielder who signed through this season. Is a free agent after that. There's a rental that you could get, a guy who just a couple days ago already had 20 home runs and 50-plus RBIs. Another one is the first baseman, Ryan Mountcastle, 27-year-old guy. I think there's another year of control with him. And then Ryan O'Hearn is another one who could play first base or outfield. So those are the type of guys that I'm kind of looking at. It's almost kind of like we're looking at some of the big names and saying, oh, could they get this guy or could they get that guy? I'm kind of looking at it as almost as, can they pull off a Brian Giles type trade where you get somebody who's not the perfect fit for the organization he's in, but could be a perfect fit for your team and really upgrade a certain position, like right field or like first base, that not just for now, but perhaps for the future as well.
Kevin Gorman of the Trib is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. The Fan and the Pirates want to visit your teams in action. For our youth baseball softball showcase, parents, coaches, email us at usports@937thefan.com. To register your 12 and under team, and the Fan might make a stop to your field. Details at 937thefan.com, Century 21 Fairways Real Estate. Kev, the Pirates desperately need Key Brian Hayes. I mean, if he was just average, if he had gone from borderline great over his final 3 months last year to just average, I'd put another 2-3 wins on the docket right now. But he's been horrible. He's been totally unproductive. How much does the back have to do with that? And what's his prospects for the second half physically?
Well, the back is a big issue for him, and it's unpredictable. It's not as simple as saying, if I do X, Y, and Z, then I'm going to be ready to play. Sometimes he does all the right things and still isn't quite where he needs to be. I think it's not only affected his bat. It may affect his bat more than anything. That's what he told me, is that he has the problems when he's trying to get right in the box. But it's also affected his play defensively, which is kind of disheartening, because the past three seasons, this guy's been the best defensive third baseman in baseball and maybe the best defensive player in baseball. He wasn't eligible for a Gold Glove in 2022 or 2021. In 2022, I thought he got robbed. In 2023, he finally won one. But he's taken a step backwards defensively, where he was superior and he was worth not just what he was getting paid, but far exceeded what he was getting paid just for his defensive alone. But Key Brian Hayes looks to me like a guy who's added some weight, is not moving as well as he used to, and isn't performing with the same kind of confidence offensively. I think he still has the pop in his bat. I think this is a guy who should be a 30 doubles, 20 homers, 75 RBIs, and batting somewhere in the 275 range guy. And I don't know if he's going to be a perennial all-star at third base the way that a Nolan Arenado is, especially with Matt Chapman in the National League now. But I certainly think he's capable of giving the Pirates more than he has. And I think not just in terms of performance, but also in terms of leadership. This is a guy that was one of the franchise cornerstones. He was the first guy they invested in, and they got a very team-friendly deal. But that doesn't mean he still doesn't have to live up to his end of the bargain.
If you called the Orioles, if the Orioles called and offered you Gunnar Henderson for O'Neill Cruz, would you do it?
No, heartbeat.
Okay, I was just making sure.
Gunnar Henderson's, he's the leading candidate for the American League MVP
right now. Here's the thing that's funny in these discussions. There are some people in this town who like, oh, no, O'Neill Cruz, look at his potential. Look at what he could become. No way. I think City Limits might be one of those.
He does have superstar
I would
potential.
Drive O'Neill Cruz to the airport if Gunnar Henderson could be here on a flight tomorrow.
I think City Limits is one of those guys.
Here's the thing. I've been saying from the get-go with O'Neill Cruz to watch him in batting practice, to watch him in games when he hits the ball. His teammates are in awe of him. They call him a unicorn. They talk about how he does things that they only wish they could do. I mean, he's hit some home runs that were 115 plus exit velo, and he's hit it with one hand. His first home run in his major league career, he basically dropped to a knee and drove the ball out of the ballpark. He's capable of doing incredible things. He's still not a polished product at shortstop, although he's got a world of potential. I think this is the type of guy who, kind of like Dave Parker, is the kind of guy who, if you look at Dave Parker's career, he really came into his own after a couple seasons in the major leagues and then was the best player in baseball. O'Neill Cruz has that type of potential, but he also has the type of potential to be tantalizingly close but not a superstar like a Gregory Polanco. And I'm not comparing the two of them. I'm just saying there's a lot of potential there and there's a lot of chance for them to be boom or bust. I think they're very different types of athletes. But because of we just watched Gregory Polanco, what he went through and how he never reached his potential, it's certainly going to be frustrating for Pirates fans every time they see Gregory Polanco make a mistake or O'Neill Cruz make a mistake or not go through his dry spells, which are more frequent than you'd like. But in terms of what you're getting from Gunnar Henderson right now, I mean, this is a guy who's one of the best players in baseball. And the Orioles could probably make that trade and withstand it, which is ridiculous how much talent they have in their system, because they have a guy in Jackson Holliday who entered the season as the number one prospect in baseball who can play shortstop or second base. They have Jordan Westberg who's playing third base. I mean, they could withstand trading Gunnar Henderson, probably only take a slight step backwards in terms of winning and losing, and have his replacement at the ready, regardless of how O'Neill Cruz performs.
Paul, may I engage Al in a game of free association?
Yes.
Ready, Gormey?
I'm game.
We've known each other a long time, so I have some questions about your career and perhaps our relationship. You ready?
I'm ready.
Greatest event you ever covered? Most memorable event?
Oh, this is like my eternally the most difficult question. I'll just tell you two that gave me goosebumps. One was when Lance Jeter hit the half-court shot to beat Al Equip in the WPL championship. I was standing on the court when the ball was inbounded, and he was dribbling away from me. But to see him make the shot to win the game, I think it was in triple overtime or double overtime. But it was an epic battle between absolute arch rivals for the WPL championship, and he hit a shot that just sent everybody into a frenzy. I mean, everybody that was there from Mount Lebanon Upper St. Clair, which was the next game, they went crazy watching that one. So that's one. The other one, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking of it right now. My arm, the hair on my arms is standing up right now. Max Talbot's game 5 goal at the Joe in 2008 Stanley Cup final. The Red Wings fans were chanting, "We want the cup." They could see the Stanley Cup behind the net in the runway. And Max Talbot, I remember I was doing, Joe, you were covering the game. I was doing all the web stuff for the trip. And I was writing, you know, live updates. And I remember saying the place was going nuts. They were 35 seconds or 36 seconds away from winning the Stanley Cup. And Max Talbot pressed the mute button. I mean, it was just the place went dead silent. And then the Penguins won in overtime and forced a game 6. Those are two that are, I mean, there's so many. I hate to leave anything out, but those are two that, as soon as you asked me that question, they came to mind.
Yeah, I think we drove there together. Me, you, Rossi, and do you remember the fourth member in the car? It's a trivia question.
Was it? I'm trying to remember. Well, I'm trying to remember if Trisha Lafferty was there with us.
It was Trish Lafferty.
I think she did all but game 6. I'm not sure if she was there for that one. I remember she had to go to a wedding for one of them, but
it was incredible. Yeah. And then, the car ride up, I started having problems, and then I missed a game because I was having more blowouts than the 07 Patriots. Do you remember that? I was stuck in the Detroit Marriott, Paul. Only time I've ever missed a game on account of sickness.
What? This was the which game?
09 Cup Finals. 08 Cup Finals.
This was 2008.
Yeah.
The one I'm talking about is game 5 in Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it would have been game 7 in Detroit. I made like $2,500 because I drove. Which year was it? 2009. They played in game 7 was in Detroit, right?
Yeah,
that was the year. I drove two dudes from Pittsburgh to Detroit. I was driving a cab.
Didn't expect this story to come up. For
I picked him up right over the right over the hills. There's a what do we call it? A legal scalper, you know, right there in that plaza. Right.
So
there.
You had no idea. They just said, "Hey, can we have a lift to Detroit?"
I answered a call in Green Tree, and I picked him up at this legal scalper. And the guy was like, "Hey, you know, we need you. We need to tie you up for the rest of the day." And I'm like, "Well, what does that mean?" And they said, "Don't worry, we're going to pay you." You know, and I took him downtown to some office. Yeah, then from there we went to Detroit.
That's incredible.
Went to the Motor City Casino for a little bit. Picked him up, brought him home.
I've dropped Zeiss off at a couple casinos along the way.
So it was and I think I want to say they gave me like $2,000 in cash.
Wow.
And they had a great time. They were hammered. They were sound asleep the whole way home. You know, and That was one of the better rides I've ever gotten. But and the other thing is I won about like $500 or $600 at the casino too. So as I always say, the Penguins winning that Stanley Cup
made you a little bit of money.
I was okay with it because it was $2,700 richer when I got home or whatever. But yes,
what a story.
Here's my question, Paul. Were your passengers okay with the hair metal CD that you obviously were going to put in for the road trip?
I always, you know, whenever people got in the car, I let them listen to whatever they wanted to listen to. You know what I mean? Except for you, yes.
Al, have you ever attacked a vending machine like Paul or any inanimate object in a fit of anger?
Oh, I'm sure I have. I'm pretty sure the Tribbs old vending machine in the cafeteria at the Clark Building was beat up a few times trying to get a candy bar out of there. I would imagine that would be one. I'm most famous or infamous at the Trib for throwing a remote control in the office at one of my colleagues and it splitting into five pieces. So that was one that I got called in. I got called into the principal's office for that one.
Speaking of anger, a quick memory from the pickup basketball game. I think I was on Joe Bendel's team. You were on the other team, and there was nearly violence. Do you remember that?
Joe Bendel and I were on the same team.
Oh.
And we got into a fight while we were teammates. Not a fist fight, but like a verbal confrontation, because Joe decided that he was going to stand in the paint and tell everybody what to do defensively. He didn't guard anybody. He just stayed in the middle. He basically said, I got the middle. You guys guard everybody else. And so then he was criticizing us for not covering people. And we were like, Joe, there's three playing against four out here, and you're standing there doing nothing. So they had to separate us and put us on different teams, and we played against each other.
Oh, I remember. I was on the court.
I think that's where when he went to your team for the final game.
I remember.
Yeah, they had
it well.
To separate. Those were some intense days when we used to play pickup basketball over at McGee. And that game you're talking about was at Armstrong Park on 12th Street in the South Side.
Yes, it was. I'll never forget it. All right, Al. We appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
We'll do it again soon.
All right. Good seeing you.
There he goes, Kevin Gorman from the Trib. The 50-minute mark on the Fan coming up, albeit not for another 20 minutes. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Wonder Twin, why don't you tell the people what we have the rest of the show? We have John Parrotto at noon.
That's right. Parrotto at noon and then much more.
You've been working on a national baseball person, haven't you?
Yes, we've been trying to get
or
Bob Nightingale.
Florence's son.
Yes, someone else, someone that'll come on and talk to us about what they think the Pirates could do with the trade deadline.
I'd be very curious to talk to a Blue Jays beat writer about whether it's realistic that Guerrero is going to be dealt. It sure seems that way at this point. And man, is he a name. So hopefully we'll have that, but definitely John Parrotto talking Pirates top of the hour. Wait, what else here today? We have a quiz show at 1 o'clock. Yes? You and IT have worked hard on this, I
imagine. IT is working very hard. We still have some work to do, but he's working very hard on it.
Paul, you ready to take me on in a quiz show?
Absolutely.
I think I'm 1-0 right now. And would you dive into a mailbag with me next? We never got to that this week.
We will definitely do that.
And there were some questions that I felt like were right up your alley.
Okay.
In this week's mailbag, including if the Pirates go in the tank, is it time to talk about Shelton's continuing this job? We have one that says, how many more years of Ben Cherington do we have to endure? If the Bucks need to win one game, who's on the mound? All of this we'll talk about next.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter. Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I got three offbeat topics on my mind. You just reminded me of one, and that's the NBA draft. But first, I want to ask you this right out of the mailbag. Actually, there's four. Actually, let's get to this. We can't avoid it any longer. A 72-year-old Bill Belichick has a 23 or 24-year-old girlfriend.
Who's a cheerleader, yes.
What is happening here? I'm trying to imagine
my
daughter.
And apparently they've been living together for like 6 months.
No, that little video that came out last year of him sneaking out of a house that looked fake was him sneaking out of her house. Well, thoughts? Anybody?
Well, I'll tell you this. My daughter is 25.
Yeah.
So a year older than this girl.
Right. If she brought home
a 70-some-year-old dude, that dude wouldn't get in the door, first of all. And second of all, I would tell her, I love you to death, but as long as you're with this dude, don't bother calling me.
I don't know what I would do. My daughter's 15.
I would lose my mind about it.
When she's 20 or 21, if she came home with an 80-year-old?
Yes.
I think I would pass out.
I think, like I said, to me, like, you know, as a parent, I'm really supportive of my kids, what they do. There's almost, you know, there's almost no real parameters in what I would accept, you know?
Yeah.
I would accept almost anything. That I would not accept. I would be like, no, we're not doing this. This dude's 25 years old. This dude's 21 years older than me. What are we talking about here?
If they get married, does he walk her down the aisle and then marry her? What's city limits? How old are you?
23.
Would you date a 70-year-old?
No.
Can you imagine?
No thought, consideration.
I'm 50.
What if city limits started dating Jane Fonda?
I'm 54 years old, and I wouldn't date a 74-year-old.
The whole entire situation is just flabbergasting to me.
People say, well, age is just a number. No.
What if City Limits started dating the woman from Titanic? I remember her.
Rose.
Yeah, right.
It's like, it has to be all about money.
What if you dated Rose from Titanic?
It's been 84 years.
You've left me speechless. I don't even know. I don't even know what to say.
This is the level of absurdity that we're dealing with here.
It's just weird.
Yes.
Well, I mean, again,
what has happened?
I don't care what anybody says. She's a gold digger. That's what she is. And I think Bill Belichick is flattered by that.
But doesn't Belichick seem like the type also who probably had her sign a bunch of papers and things at the beginning? Like he was, you know, this was some waiver pickup or something.
She
signed a contract.
An NDA.
Yeah, exactly. The whole an NDA. Thing, the you whole have no rights to my money. Yeah.
The whole thing is really bizarre to me. It's just weird.
It's it's tragic comic, you know?
You know,
it's
like to me,
things. It's funny
to me,
and sad.
And did you see, there was a story that came out maybe last week, her last boyfriend.
He was 65.
He was like 65 years old. She's mature beyond her years. Yes. She loved your money. What are we talking about here?
She moved in with him in Hingham, Massachusetts.
Right.
So they live together right now. Oh my God! Look at these photos.
The ones of him sneaking out of the house are hilarious with no shirt on.
Apparently, they do homework together.
Oh my God!
He helps her with homework. Is that
he helps with the math test?
What?
He says, "Gramps, come over here and help me with my quiz I have tomorrow."
See, I wouldn't be dealing with this.
She's only 23.
I think she's 24, but still.
All right. Why is she doing this? Just money?
It has to be
Paul,
for money.
But Paul, why?
Fame.
No, I think it's more than that, Paul.
Yeah.
This was the 65-year-old famous and rich?
No, he was rich, though.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
It's all about the money.
It is that reason.
I mean, again, here's my question. If it's when people say, well, it's not about the money. Okay, please show me a poor 75-year-old dude that's dating a hot 23-year-old.
I mean.
Okay, show me the guy that lives in the senior center on his Social Security ticket. You know what I mean? That he's on fixed income and that there's 23-year-olds that want to date him. If it's not about money.
The last guy, it says here on TMZ, they bonded over psychology, philosophy, and nature and then became romantic.
They bonded over nature? What were they doing? Looking at cherry blossoms together?
I don't know. He seems very happy for her.
Well, I'm sure he's pretty happy as well with the condition that he's in.
I'm with Paul.
Like I said.
5 years from now, if my kid brought home a 70-year-old guy and said, this is my boyfriend, I don't know what I would do to him.
My grandmother is 75. It's weird.
That would just be strange. You know?
I mean, there's so many inappropriate jokes that come to mind that I'm afraid to say them, so I won't. Let's move on, shall we? I'm glad we had to deal with that at some point, didn't we?
Was it the elephant in the room?
It was.
But again, anytime anyone tells you, well, you know, age is just a number and it's not about money, it's about love. I will always challenge those people to say, okay, well, good. Show me the number of 75-year-old, 77-year-old dudes who have nothing that are dating hot 23-year-olds. I'll hang up and listen.
They started dating in 2022, which means it's conceivable he was 70 and she was 21. What? All right, let's move on from that.
Maybe she got her first drink at the bar from Belichick. Maybe he's the one that bought it for her.
How did they meet? Did they meet on a flight?
She was a cheerleader for the Patriots.
Yeah.
What?
Yes. Which, by the way, aren't there rules about fraternizing? The cheerleaders aren't allowed to fraternize with players and coaches?
No, I would think so.
I think there are rules about that.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
What if City Limits started dating Elizabeth Waldo, who is the oldest living celebrity? She's 105.
Where's Waldo?
Well, that's a good question. She's a violinist, composer, and conductor. She was born in June of 1918. Would you go on a date with her, Limits?
No.
No,
I would not.
She's 105.
105. So, I hope to see the day where I'm 105.
What's the age difference there? 90 years? 80 years? You're 24?
About 80 years.
80 years. What's the difference between Belichick and this woman?
He's 75 and she's, what, 24?
Yeah. 72, 72 and 24.
You're talking about 50 years.
Yeah, 48 years.
Okay, seriously, when Bill Belichick was born, it was 1952.
Yeah.
What does he possibly have in common with this kid that was just born in 2010?
Maybe they bond over Frank Sinatra music.
Eva Marie Saint, the famous actress from On the Waterfront and others, I believe is still alive, and she turns 100 on July 4th. Limits. You never know. All right.
She says, wait.
Who? Jordan Hudson? Is that Belichick's girlfriend? Is that
Jordan
her name?
Hudson.
How about this text from a texter? Sounds crazy, but my twin sister married our high school history teacher. She was 18. He was 46. Her next husband, when she was in her late 20s or early 30s, was 69.
Okay.
How about that?
1952.
No comment.
What are we talking about here?
What were you going to say?
No, I was just, I thought there was some, I thought
a
there,
punchline there?
I thought she had issued a statement of some sort. I was reading it and it wasn't. It was somebody issuing a statement defending her and then someone issuing a statement ripping her.
But Limits, that would be actually a way to become rich and famous. Is to date the woman from Titanic.
Not that interested in being that famous for that reason of being rich.
IT got a kick out of that. Do you remember that movie, IT, where she narrates from the beginning?
Oh, yeah. He remembers.
Rose.
Yeah, Rose.
Rose.
From Titanic. They two would make an unbelievable couple, Limits.
I mean, what'd you say? She's 105 years old?
Something like that. Yeah.
Somebody said she wasn't a cheerleader for the Patriots. She was a cheerleader at a small college, and they met on a flight.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Is that right?
Well, that makes it better.
I thought she was a Patriots
cheerleader. That makes it better, he said.
It doesn't make it that much better.
I'm being facetious.
Can we move on to the NBA draft?
Yes.
Not to talk about whether any of these 18-year-olds are dating 90-year-olds, but Bob Carrington gets picked 14th overall. Zach Edey, I think, will be the pick of the draft by Memphis, and I knew he was going to go in the top 10. Your thoughts on the whole draft, thoughts on Carrington, Paul?
As we talked yesterday, I think Bob Carrington is a guy that has a chance to be a really good NBA player. He's got to work on some things. He's got to get a little bigger and stronger, but he'll be fine. I think that he's the guy that has a chance to be one of the better players in this draft. I'm not sure that's saying much because I don't know. I mean, when you're watching the draft, Joe, and the first 10 picks are off the board and you barely know any of them. Edey, the thing about Edey is he's going to have a 15-year NBA career.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt.
He's what is he, 7'4" or whatever? How tall is he again?
7'4" with like an 11-foot wingspan.
And he's big. And he's, you know, and he's big and he's made himself.
And he's not George Mirazan. Yeah, it's not like himself, he can barely walk. He's athletic.
He's pretty athletic. He's made himself very serviceable. You know, teams, a lot of teams play differently than they used to, throwing the ball into the post. But you still got to guard the rim and you still got to guard bigger guys. And, you know, I think he's going to be a guy who probably is going to sign four or five contracts, you know, and have a really nice NBA career. Will he be a superstar? I don't know, because the game is so different now. You know, it's completely different, which I thought it was interesting that Filipowski or whatever his name is from Duke did not get drafted.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
He didn't get drafted in the first.
That's very interesting.
Right. And to me, you know, he's a seven-footer that sort of has the kind of game that NBA teams are looking for.
That's what I thought.
So, you know, the fact that Klingman and or whatever his name is from UConn and Edie both got drafted early, you know, that to me was probably a little bit of the story of the draft, just from the standpoint of those are the kind of big men that, you know, in general, the league has been moving away from, you know?
Well, I do. But with Carrington, I just noticed, I thought it was Portland, but that pick wound up going to Washington.
Yes.
And he's a Maryland kid. Good for him.
Right.
He'll be going home to play. I got a quiz question for both of you. He is the fourth highest pick in Pitt program history at 14 overall. Who are the three guys taken higher than him in the draft?
Well, Steven Adams is one.
And Charles Smith is another, because wasn't he the second pick of the draft?
He was number three. Adams was number 12.
Yeah.
Who's the third guy?
Wow.
He once sat right in this studio with me and Ron Cook for a show.
Time range, like 70s, 60s?
Wait, hold up.
He's still in the league.
This is a trick question. They're not counting the kid that went to North Carolina, right?
Yeah, they are. Cam Johnson.
Cam Johnson? I wouldn't count that.
You can't count that.
He wasn't selected as a Pitt player.
Okay, that's fair. But they did in this story. So, okay, then Smith and Adams.
I mean, do you count that?
The more I think about it,
probably
not.
The guy played his last 2 years at North Carolina.
Probably not. Let's do a quick mailbag question. Fan weather. Brought to you by Sun Chevy, 24 Silverado LT Crew Cab, up to $7,500 in rebates. Full terms and qualifications at sunchevy.com. High is 79 today with sunny skies. I'm picturing city limits out on a date with Rose from Titanic. Where would they go, Paul? Can you imagine? Just out at a, you know, I don't know.
Maybe the Gateway Clipper would fit perfectly for the boat theme.
Dancing at the Gateway Clipper, right?
Yes.
Maybe up at Lamont, Mount Washington. Maybe just at a coffee shop, you know?
Maybe at a nursing home.
Maybe at a Pirates game, something like that. I don't know. It would be incredible.
No, it would not.
One game. Here's what I got asked in the mailbag. What if the Pirates were in a one-game playoff to get into the wild card? If they tied at the end of the season, or let's say they go to the wild card and it goes to game three. In other words, any one game scenario, if you could choose who's on the mound for you, Paul, from the Pirates in a one game scenario.
This year?
Yeah.
Skeens.
Easy choice over Kelly.
I don't even think about it.
Skeens, easily. Lights out, dominant. Going to be a Cy Young winner at some point. Probably going to win Rookie of the Year.
Skeens for me, but not so easily. Keller has been a star now for 2 months. Like, he's pitching as good as anybody in the league is what he's doing for 2 months. So let's see what happens moving forward. But we all agree on that. Johnny Parrotto up next, talking Pirates. I want to ask him about some trade scenarios and what it might take to pry a guy like Vladimir Guerrero loose from Toronto. What would Johnny be willing to part with? And what does he think that Ben Cherington and Bob Nutting have the stomach for? That's coming up next.